Welcome to Spaghetti Launchers, the world-building podcast where we throw spaghetti at the wall and it is up to you what sticks. I'm Kyle.
I'm Ethan. Today's episode, we are talking about thrones. Kyle is currently sitting in a plush green chair.
Ethan's currently sitting in a not plush green chair. I was thinking about thrones in prep, and I thought about Elvis, and that he was a king, and that he died on...
He did die on the throne.
On the throne. Yeah, died in a toilet, if you didn't know. But yeah, thrones, where special people sit. Could be ruler.
That is the broadest definition of a throne I have ever heard.
Well, when we talked about crowns, we had this little debate about, I said a monarch or a ruler wears it, and you said, well, it could just be anybody who's special. And I think with a throne, it's the same thing. It's like, if you're special, you sit on a throne, but normally it would be
a ruler. If it's your birthday, you sit on a throne and you get a crown.
You probably aren't sitting on a throne on your birthday.
I think when it's your birthday, any chair that you happen to be sitting in, by default, becomes your throne.
Okay, there you go. So, thrones. I think in...
Famously the subject of games.
Yeah, I think in specfic, Game of Thrones, the fact that it has it in its title helps, but the Iron Throne, I think, just put itself as this clear front runner for best and most important throne in fiction, full stop. And I think it is probably that. It is.
Narratively speaking, sure.
Also, I mean, like, visually and the intensity, especially like in the book version.
Made of the melted swords of all of your enemies melted by dragon fire. It's tense like, across the board.
And like super big. Like it's because it's like really tall in the books and like in the show. That
and also really up. Uncomfortable to sit in.
Like, yeah.
The whole thing is spectacular.
Yeah. And they also, in House of the Dragon, they, you know.
They expanded it a little bit.
But they talk about like the other thrones in Westeros, where it's like, I forget what they're called, but there's like this throne and this throne. And really, I think referring, and I love that vibe of referring to different, different ruling positions, being like, I sit on the Iron Throne. I sit on the Stone Throne. Mm-hmm. I sit on the throne of Star Metal.
The
Water Throne.
Like the Earth Throne, the Fire Throne, the Air Throne.
And like, if you get into more nuanced and specific terms, I think you could really like do a lot in that.
The Throne of Teeth.
Why we gotta do that again? That's the most iconic throne, for sure.
Would have to give
an alternate.
I do have an alternate, okay. Actually.
Go for it. What is it, Power Rangers?
No, it's not, believe it or not. Palpatine's spinning chair on the Death Star.
It's pretty cool.
It's pretty great, man.
That's a good throne, but it doesn't feature for long.
It features enough that it is immediately recognizable whenever anyone does it again. Case in point, when they did it again in Revenge of the Sith and everyone was like, oh, they're doing that again. And then when they also did it in Ted Lasso season 3 with Rupert's office. With him in the spinning chair in front of the big glass window, immediately knew, oh, this is a Palpatine thing.
This is a Death Star, yeah.
The other one that I'll give, hilariously, though, is Dragon Ball Z, which is Frieza's little floating hover pod thing that he moves around in.
Yeah.
I think those are also pretty iconic. The other one that I'll give is, Metron's throne in the DC comic universe. Okay. So he's one of the new gods. He's kind of an advisor to Darkseid. And he has a hovering chair. It's his throne, but a throne fancy chair. It's his hovering chair that also allows him to travel and teleport across space, maybe time, I don't remember, but and gives him access to borderline omniscient knowledge. It's very cool. It's a knowledge-based chair.
I really like in Return of the King when they really show the visual of the king or the throne of Gondor versus the steward's throne.
Yeah.
Like it's like the stairs are so tall. The fact that they built that and we're like, one day he's gonna come and he's gonna occupy this throne.
Well, I think that was the same throne, I'm sure, that was occupied.
But it's just
and Denethor is also here.
They clearly like have been maintaining it. Like they haven't had a king in a long time.
Yeah.
And then they just have they like had to build a secondary throne just to note this is not a king.
I mean, psychologically speaking, there is no other physical example or physical clarification of come along afterthought than that tiny ass little chair next to that throne.
Compared to like, you know, when they show like Theoden sitting just in like a very nice, like a very traditional monarchical a throne at the end of a great hall. And that's it. And like, that just feels more grounded versus the grandeur of, look at my marble throne up here, which is kind of intense.
Yeah.
The Pope Mobile is kind of a throne.
I agree with that. I'll give you that.
It's a mobile throne.
I'll give you that.
That's kind of fun.
Would we call, without getting into politics, would we call the Resolute Desk a throne?
That's a good question.
Because it is part of like the seat of power,
right? I think yes. I think, because I think it is, it's the station that you occupy to signify your position.
Yeah. The physical sitting location that you occupy. Yeah.
And I think, you know, like places of power, there's like a fine line. My mind went to the visual of, you know, when they do like the Prime Minister of the UK outside of 10 Downing Street, like like the iconic image that they do all the time. And it's like, that's a place of power. But that, and that is often where the public sees them being Prime Minister versus we see the Oval Office.
Yeah.
And the Oval Office is kind of just one big throne.
Yeah.
You know, the like, I love when they do like in the West Wing, when they talk about the like the minutiae of daily happenings in that room and the way it's like you stand, you sit, like you do this, like what this, like
everything is choreographed.
There's so much protocol and choreography, which, and this is, this would be kind of in my frozen lasagna as well. I just love the idea that the room is basically like, I control everything in this room about who is sitting down, and thus it's kind of a throne.
No, and, I think that's, that's a good one. I'm glad we touched on that. Also, you mentioned the Pope Mobile. The Pope does have a throne.
Yeah. We got a lot of them, probably.
Yeah. Francis famously changed it.
He's a good dude.
Made it less audacious.
Yeah.
Is that the word?
Gaudy.
Gaudy. Yeah.
Yeah, gaudy works.
Yeah. What has Leo done with it? I haven't checked.
I don't know. Probably nothing. He's probably I mean, he's just continuing basically as much as he can with what Francis did.
Oh, cool. Good.
That's
good
luck. That's his whole shtick.
Dope.
He was a friend and kind of protege.
Amazing.
So... anyway, let's move into our teases of our noodles today. What is your teaser for your noodles, sir?
Giddy up.
Your favorite saying in real life.
One of. Yeah. Yeah.
Lit. That's your other. Mine is quite the reminder.
Dope. What are you reminding us of?
Okay. So this is, I'm pulling from a couple examples here to make one thing. And I was in the National Museum of Finland in Helsinki, and they had a throne there from the, it was a Russian Tsar's throne.
Hmm.
And they had it because the Russians put a throne in Helsinki as a reminder that we won, we conquered you. You are now our subjects. They didn't really occupy the throne. If they came to Helsinki, they would sit in it, but they put it there as like a, we won, we're in charge.
That's cool.
You need a
throne as a reminder. Yeah, yeah, that's cool. I hadn't thought about that. Yeah,
and
that's a good thing.
I fucking love that. Yeah, I think it's so cool. Interesting. I took a photo of it, and I was like, I was really like locked in on this history. I mean, it was in a museum as a tourist. Yeah, not a very crowded museum because it's Finland. But
wait, I'm sorry, you got to break that down for me. What?
There's just not a lot of people in Finland.
Oh, okay.
It's also like,
I was like, why are you shitting on the Finns?
I fucking love Finland. It was also October, so it's like, it's already
off
cold.
Season.
No, it's just already cold.
People, yeah.
Sidebar, if you go to Finland, and a friend of mine did in like December,
yeah,
when you arrive and you're coming in from the airport, there's a little billboard that says, you came to Finland in winter, you badass, you.
That's
and
fun.
Like literally said, you badass, for commenting on the fact that people shouldn't be here in winter as tourists.
That's
but like,
fun.
That's pretty cool that you did, because it's really brutal. But
that's
beautiful
fun.
Place, everyone should go there. Finland's great. But anyway, I want to take that, and I kind of want to take a little Iron Throne elements here. And having a, this definitely is like, it's very imperial. I think it works best in the imperial context. And having them leave behind a throne in every part of the world that they conquer, as like in whatever like major city, capital city, whatever, to just say like, if the empire ever comes through here, we need you to know that like we're reminding you of your place. But then having it also maybe be constructed out of melting down the old ruler's throne, or like breaking it apart and using the component parts, kind of like the Iron Throne, and signifying like, you know, or straight up doing it with like the melted down steel of their swords, however you want to do it, but really like leaning into like this like kind of cruel and very tacky and probably unnecessary reminder that you have been conquered.
Yeah, it's a real dick move.
It's a dick move, but they're a conquering empire. That's probably what they're, sure. They're dicks, famously. And I mean, that's kind of the extent of the idea. So
it reminds me, I think we talked about something very similar to this in an earlier episode, and you had the idea that every home in this invented world should have a little shrine or a seat available for the ruler whenever they show up.
Oh yeah. And no, it was for the Messiah or the prophet. If the prophet ever comes to you, you should be able to receive them.
Yeah, it was something like that. And so this is sort of related to that. This is also a really great, it doesn't even have to be an empire.
No.
It could be a...
It could be a crime family.
It could be a crime family. It could be a fiefdom. It could be... I'm thinking about Agamemnon as the king of kings, right?
Mm.
And so...
That's actually a really interesting point. Have Agamemnon-like clout.
Yeah.
Where you just... Every court has their king's throne.
Right.
But next to it is another throne reserved for you.
Right.
If you should come to visit.
Right.
And it is
grander than the standard king.
Or maybe it's not grander, but it is like of equal stature to say, even in my house, you are my equal.
Yeah.
In my land where I rule supreme, you, King of Kings, are of equal to me. King of Kings is also Jesus. Now I'm realizing that.
That's what they called Agamemnon in the 2004 Troy movie. They called him King of Kings.
Okay, yeah. Anyway, I think that's a really good note. I like that. And I like it in... And we were talking about the Penguin before we start recording, and you know, like a mafia style dynamic. And I think because that is so much easier, I think, to deploy in any type of world or story, to have just like a narcissistic crime boss or like guild leader or you know, like commander of knights or something who does a similar thing and just says like, I am important enough, I'm powerful enough, and I move around enough, and like I'll pay you visits more often than you'd expect, so you better build me a throne when I come.
Honestly, CEO.
Yeah. Also works.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just any leader who has, you know, who is a narcissist mostly, or who really wants to project power. Because it is a pretty impressive projection of power.
It is. It's. We were talking the other day about 30 Rock and the power move that Jack Donaghy played on Liz Lemon when she tried to set up the negotiation meeting in the donut shop. And she walks in and he had completely recreated his office in there.
Yeah.
But it is a power move.
Yeah, yeah. And you're like, I'm sitting in the same seat I always sit in, and then removed the cushions from her seat. So it was like, so she was like lower down.
Yeah.
You're like, the power dynamic is here. And that's that's also an interesting element is... Like you could, you know, within a throne room, for instance, like you have a great hall or something, and there's a big banquet table, and you have your throne, and then you lower everybody else's chair.
Yeah.
You do both. I have a throne, and your seating will be make you look less powerful and a reminder of the relative position in this. Thrones everywhere. Reminder thrones. That's kind of the vibe I'm going for.
Reminder thrones.
Yeah.
So. Reminder thrones.
Anyway.
Very cool. Yeah.
Move on to your
real
idea.
Great way to be a dick about it.
Yeah, true. Giddy up, bud. Where are we getting you up to?
We were talking about Game of Thrones earlier.
Is this a horse?
Fuck you. We were talking about Game of Thrones earlier. It always bugged the shit out of me that this very deliberately nomadic tribe had a central office and that a central home base.
Yeah.
And that Khal Drogo had a throne there. I'm like, that is not...
That's not how this works.
That's not how this works. That's not nomad. That's just roving.
Yeah.
Expansion. I don't know what it is, but it's not nomadic.
Did Genghis Khan, I think he probably did the same thing.
He did the same, but he was very deliberately imperial.
Yeah.
The Dothraki were, to my knowledge, not imperial.
Good point.
Or conquering.
Yeah. They were just
sort
nomads.
Of there.
Yeah. Yeah. He should have just had, I mean.
But that's the idea, is that in a purely nomadic tribe, the throne would be the mode of transportation.
Yeah.
It would be
a very regal horse.
It would be a very regal horse or griffin or Kirin or dragon, whatever it is. I don't frankly care. Or Chocobo in the Final Fantasy universe. I don't frankly fucking care. But I do like this idea of the whoever happens to be the ruler of that tribe at that specific time, their mount is... the throne is the seat of power. And if they are slain in battle, if they die of old age or natural causes, then the next ruler has to form a bond with their mount until their mount dies. And that's sort of how lineage is passed. So if I have, if we're the Dothraki and I have my horse and then I'm killed in battle and you are my heir apparent, you then have to form a bond with my horse in order to be legitimized as ruler, to be able to take the seat of power and have that be seen as legitimate.
So,
and then if let's say you're the, and then the horse dies under your reign, then you get to pick your own horse. But that's sort of how, so it's this sort of leapfrogging of mounts and rulers.
So it, is the leader's mount special other than just its relationship to the leader? Is it like a
better? I think that depends on the world.
Why isn't it that they put a really elaborate, like with a back kind of saddle, like and make it that like whatever you put on the horse is the throne, but you're saying it's the horse itself.
I'm saying that the mount itself.
So it's a living throne.
It is a living throne.
Interesting.
It is the mount itself.
It's so different. It's
than what you were thinking.
No, then like just full stop.
Yes.
It's just, it's such, it's like hard to contemplate or to fully wrap your head around that. Like, yeah, you just have a throne that is literally a horse, like a normal looking horse. Uh-huh. It just happens to be the horse that is, you know, designated for this leader. So like if in the stable, you wouldn't, like if you walked into a stable and you didn't know whose horse is whose, you wouldn't be able to tell which one was the royal horse.
Except for the fact that people treated it
better,
would treat it with incredible deference.
Or do they even do that?
Yes.
Okay. I like it.
There's the whole point of it is that it is, there is not much there. I'm trying to think.
I mean, I have alts on it.
I don't dislike the idea of having the saddle be the throne too. Yeah. That's also kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
I like the idea because I like, again, I'm big into rights of succession. I think those are just always fun.
Please see our succession.
And episode. So there, I think there's a lot. I think there's some cool stuff there about having to form the bond with the animal. Yeah, yeah. It's Game of Thrones with Aemon having to bond with Vhagar, and passing down power by the bond with this creature that I think is cool.
The Game of Thrones example is really interesting. Well, this is all basic Game of Thrones, really. But the dragon example is really good because I think they did a great job of showing that in House of the Dragon in season one, where Aemon just snipes Vhagar and is like, I'm taking this dragon,
right,
going out there and bonding with it on the one night where it's unbonded to a rider,
right,
and I'm gonna like it, it's not supposed to be mine, but I'm just gonna steal it.
Sure.
And that idea that like you like the, you know, they did it in the second season of like, oh, these people who happen to have Targaryen blood are bond, like these normies are bonding with these dragons.
Yeah.
And it's like a shocker and like that kind of thing.
And it immediately and elevates power, their status and power.
Now
and
they become a dragon lord. You know,
right.
Like they become, and having Vhagar be like, this is the most powerful dragon by far. You bonding with it puts you in a whole new power tier. So that's a really interesting example.
Yeah. So there's, that's sort of the idea that I'm playing with. And you could change it to say, all right, you know, I die, you form a bond with my horse, and then you're legitimized as king.
Yeah.
When my horse dies, you know, who had legitimized you, maybe what happens is that you're not allowed to just simply go back to the horse that you had before. Maybe you got to go out and tame a wild one.
If you're in charge, you die. I'm your only son. I'm your only child. And I am your only heir, but I can't bond to your horse. Do we have a succession crisis? Can I just like in the middle of the night go kill the horse in secret? And people will be like, well, the horse died, and everyone turns a blind eye to that. You know, how does it work out if you aren't being able to bond? And can you, like, if you do kill the horse and no one knows it was you, no one can prove it was you, do people care?
Yes.
So both things are an option.
Yeah, I think they're both completely viable options.
So you can, so you could have a succession crisis, or you could also do it where if you're sneaky, you can go kill the horse and everyone will just be, that's a resourceful king. They're in charge now.
I think people would probably see him. I think they would know and see. It depends on the cultural mores of the tribe, of the group. Right?
I think, okay, here's what I would say. Here's my idea is that to fast track your rule and like being legitimized, to, like if you can bond with the now dead ruler's horse, you are like very clearly worthy and you don't like, and now like we just continue on as normal. Yeah. If you can't bond with the horse and you have to, you know, kill the horse and do something different, it is like, it's a huge black mark on, yeah, on your rule, but you are still the legitimate ruler.
Yeah,
but people, but, that you, makes but sense. You aren't respected, and you're, and like you have, and this I think you can then have like you have honor bound rituals you need to now do to earn respect in different ways.
Yeah, it starts you off on a very significant deficit. Yeah.
Like, oh well, then you're not a good horse lord, so right, you have to prove that you can fight
right
on a different level. Right. You have to, you have to beat the tribe's best fighter in a duel.
Right,
you have to, like, you now have to go do some super successful, impressive raid of some neighboring area. You yeah know, like you need to do something that, like, some great feat to make up for the fact that you couldn't do the basic thing, which mm-hmm was the bond with the horse, which is super quick and easy. And that's easy mode. If you fail easy mode, then you got to start and do the whole thing from scratch.
Yeah, I think that, I think all roads lead to Damascus.
That's not true. This road does not lead to Damascus. There's like a whole ocean between us and Damascus. There's a couple, you know, like depending on which way you go.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. What
okay. I just want to throw out a couple more alts that I think are worth just mentioning is that, because I, like, yeah, I, you know, I think your idea is the best version of this, but then I think you could do the, like, oh, you have a really fancy saddle that, like you have a throne that you put on a particular horse, and that horse then, like how Air Force One isn't Air Force One unless the president's on it.
Yeah.
Like, this horse is not the throne.
Regality is conferred by the presence
of
something else.
Of the ruler, and of, in this particular case, of the throne apparatus. So you can move yeah it from horse to horse.
Yeah.
So if the horse gets tired, you can change to a different horse, and they might have like a whole slew of horses that they just rotate this throne on, so that they all, the king always has, or the
cow, the best horse,
always has a healthy, well-rested horse. So
oh, that's cool.
Because,
yeah, I like that.
Just because, like, oh, well, like, they have extra weight on them, and so that's a harder burden, and, like, horses do tire, and they know that. So much like there are, like, five or, you know, four marine ones.
Yeah.
And, like they have the same helicopter
yeah
for all of them, and they just rode, and so they're, like, three of them fly in formation.
It's less a physical thing and more just a designation.
Yeah. So they whichever one they saddle with the throne saddle, that's the throne mm-hmm for the day. That's one idea. I'm thinking about Return of the King a lot, but like thinking about those Oliphants, and like, what if for your tribe you had a non-horse mount, like you had a big elephant or some other giant creature that you could put, like, you know, like a little bit of a throne room on top of, like you know, on the Oliphants where they have the big mm-hmm thing up there with where all the guys are shooting from.
Oh, if it's an underwater nomadic tribe, it could be a whale instead of all the other sea creatures are different types of mounts. That could actually be really fun.
It's less common.
It is.
Yeah.
But imagine, like, yes, the throne is a blue whale, and then
it's inside the blue whale.
Who are we, Jonah?
Yeah.
Is this a biblical story now?
Yeah. Just play around with the size of the mount, and can you be like, I mean, and maybe because it doesn't work well if you're really nomadic, then it needs to also be that the cow can move quickly, just as quickly as everybody else. And like Khal Drogo would not be caught dead on a, like, riding on a pleasure barge. He'd be like, no, give me a horse. I'm going on the horse.
Right.
And I think that's where, like, I think that's the best version, but you can, like, play with that however you want to mm-hmm be like, you know, can it be a
mutant? I like
one?
That idea of it being a different animal,
yeah,
maybe one that is traditionally more wild, so that you are not the ruler of the tribe is not getting domesticated animal. They have to, that would lead credence to if the mount dies, you have to go out and tame your own.
Mm. Interesting. Yeah.
That's the proof, is like, you have gone out and proven, hey, I can tame this thing.
Or like in the, you know,
very, yeah.
What if Khal Drogo had been able to tame a dragon? And he rode a dragon while all of his people rode horses.
Right. Yeah.
And it was like, well, I have a flying mount.
Right.
And you.
That's what I'm saying.
And yeah, but then like also like I'm talking about like being physically in a different space. Like you are now flying and they're all on the ground. Sure. And then like, you know, and I mean, that's kind of what they get at. They don't lean into it with Daenerys, but they're like, she can fly. And then she has the
Drogon was her throne.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was the seat, and that was her seat and the symbol of her power.
Yes.
It also happened to be a weapon.
Yeah. But I made this joke earlier, but I actually think there's something interesting in it. Is like if a turtle was your mount and then it just was saying, you move at my pace. This turtle doesn't go fast. Fuck you. You don't like
feel strategically disadvantaged.
Yeah, yeah. But it's like, I mean, they can easily dismount to get on something else. But like when they're just like casually moving, they're like, I ride a turtle. Suck it.
I think it's all golden, baby.
I don't.
That made Kyle physically.
I don't
wince.
Know why you said that.
I don't
very,
either.
It was very
I just,
weird.
I don't know. It just came out.
And you, all right, let's move on.
Secondary ideas, frozen lasagna. I have my list as per usual.
Okay.
So I want to hear what you got first.
My initial idea was I was thinking about Arya Tuluk in Mass Effect 2, crime boss, and you go to her lounge and she has like the private area that's like a pretty large amount of space overlooking the lounge, and it's like her little throne room. And I remember she sits on this couch, and it's like a really big couch, and kind of and like she offers you a seat, but there was like an implication that like I sit on this couch, and if I invite you to the couch, you can sit there. Otherwise, don't take a seat.
Yeah, that's cool.
And I liked that idea that, you know, just having this big extra amounts of seating that is just it's the power move of. I tell you if you sit or not.
Yeah.
I'm the only person allowed to sit on this couch freely.
I didn't remember that, or I didn't notice that, but that's cool.
Yeah. So that's it. Is, you know, a couch that the ruler occupies and no one else can be on it without their permission. And it's a real power move and works really well with, I think, a crime boss specifically.
Yeah. I like that a lot.
So
anyway. Yeah, super fun.
All right. Move on to your list. Is any of these a bird's nest? All right, there's a bird's nest.
There's a bird's nest.
All right, let's go.
Though that was the first idea. It was just a giant bird's nest. I thought that was cool. We've also got an old plastic chair, a rock, which happens to be the rock where the first leader stood to declare victory in combat.
That's
a throne that can broadcast an image of the ruler to every castle/ship/location in the region, like the holograms in Star Wars that shows people sitting in chairs. And also the ruler can use the throne to teleport to any other throne in the region. Thought that could be fun. A throne card from another dimension that allows a ruler to communicate with higher powers. A flying cloud. A throne that is the lap of the king's protector spirit. A throne of teeth. Westworld had a really cool scene in the last season where the robot people figured out how to control humans with sound, and one of them used sound to have normal people reorganize themselves into a chair she could sit on. I thought that was kind of cool.
Okay.
So it's a throne of literal, like, mind-controlled human bodies. A winter throne made of ice. When it melts and the sitting ruler falls through, then their reign ends. A toilet. And a half-melted throne made of slag, which is supposed to show, like, the resiliency of this empire. That, yes, we survived all these multiple attacks. And so that's why it's half-melted, it's half-destroyed, and it's sort of like the wrecked throne. But it's still standing.
Okay. What's stuck for you? There's too many to respond to all of them, so we're moving on.
Yeah, I'm stuck on the moving throne. I genuinely really like that. Like the idea. You know, I also like playing with definitions. It's like, oh, it's not just a chair.
It's not just a port. It's also a university.
Exactly. I like that. And I like that you have to incorporate, you know, just in the same way that the Game of Thrones lore had, oh, a bad king that sits on the Iron Throne will get hurt by it more than a good king.
Uh-huh.
And I like that sort of almost magic realism of there's something special going on here that we don't fully understand, but you've got to account for. And I think having the living mount, the living throne be the focal point of that works really well.
Yeah.
What about you?
I love the conceptual change of the moving throne, of the core moving throne, of just it's a regular mount. And because it also just logically makes sense that, like, why wouldn't a nomadic people have a fucking horse that, like, you know, or like a throne that is moving? There's the sense of, like, only the most secure people don't need to prove it to you.
Right.
The most powerful people don't need to prove that they're powerful.
Right.
They don't need to sit on a fucking special chair.
Right.
They ride a regular horse.
Right.
Like everybody else.
Right.
Because they don't need to project power falsely.
Right.
They, like, and like Khal Drogo, like, commanded the respect of everybody. He didn't need to do jack shit.
Right.
You know, and so he could just ride a regular horse and everyone would be following him. Like, you know, everything's the same. And I like that. And I like the idea that there's the succession thing. I think that, like, that question we had there, and like that, like, well, what do you do in these particular scenarios? I think there's a lot of fun in and intrigue in that, which works. That, yeah. Like, I love the idea that, like, you know, yeah, if you can't bond to it, you're still going to take over, but people are going to really have a lack of respect for you. You were elected without a mandate,
basically.
Yeah.
And like, it gets into, you can play around with it, because then you get to start playing with what are the mores and values of this culture and of the society. Do they value bravery and bravado, or do they value treachery and sneakery?
Sneakery.
Those will both depend how that line of succession is viewed.
Also, this, and I thinking about it, you know, so what
sneakery is great. I'm that was a complete brain fart, and I love it. I'm taking
subterfuge would be
sneakery is way better.
Okay, anyway, thinking about it now, that what if the new Khal is able to bond with the horse and to take legitimate rule, and still chooses to go do feats of strength to, like, further their legitimacy and say,
yeah,
I am your, like, chosen king. Like, I am truly it should me. Be in charge. Yeah, like, I'm 100% that king. Like, and make people really be on board with them in, like, a different way, rather than just saying, well, I took the throne, all is good, we continue on as normal. Saying, I'm aspiring to do even greater.
Yeah.
And I think that could be fun, especially if they fuck up and they accidentally and they kill themselves, like they die in this
doing something
in this the arrogance of it. And then the next king can't, like, then you have a huge existential crisis, because the next one is like, I'm not prepared to be king. And this horse just bonded with a new guy. Doesn't want me anyway. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot that's fun in there. Yeah. Well, that's what stuck for us.
Let us know what stuck for you.
Emails in the show notes.
Thanks for listening.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.